I'm very pleased now to introduce our next speaker, Dr. Motudugu Gupta. Dr. Gupta, for over 40 years, has been involved in the development of low-cost, small-scale aquaculture practices that could be sustained by small-scale farmers. He worked with the Mekong Secretariat of the UN, SCAP, FAO, and the World Fish Center for nearly 30 years in a number of countries. He has been a consultant to a number of regional and international organizations and development agencies. Dr. Gupta is the recipient of a number of awards and honorary degrees and a distinguished fellow in many scientific societies. The recognition of his contributions to alleviating poverty and hunger through aquaculture, he was given the World Food Prize in 2005. And I'd be remiss as president of the World Aquaculture Society to also note that last year we confirmed the Lifetime Honor Membership Award as well. So please join me in a warm welcome for Dr. Gupta.
Good afternoon.
I am surprised even that the third day there are so many participants in the room. In most of the conference I attended on the third day, the participation will be thin because most of the people would have got exhausted after 2 days of deliberation and gone for sightseeing. That indicates the interest of the people in the topic. In the last couple of days, we have been discussing the status of aquaculture, future prospects, and issues related to sustainability. Any developmental planning has to be holistic, taking into consideration the technical, economic, social, and cultural aspects. So far, we have been concentrating more on technological issues, and this session, we will look at the opportunities and issues involved in enhancing the contribution of aquaculture to poverty alleviation, food security, and rural development. This talk will be followed by 4 panel discussions on issues related to the topic. 2 of the panels will be meeting just after this talk, and other 2 panels will be meeting tomorrow morning. Let us briefly look at the hunger and poverty situation globally. FAO estimates that 950 million people will go hungry in this year, the 2010. Of these, 578 million are over 60% are in Asia-Pacific region, the region that contributes over 90% of global aquaculture production and expected to contribute more in the future. Countries are way behind in achieving Millennium Development Goal of reducing poverty by year 2015. Micronutrient deficiencies, or some people call as hidden hunger, as Professor Shakuntala has said, is affecting more than 2 billion people globally. Global economic slowdown and higher food prices in recent years pushed more people towards hunger and poverty and has been a major concern many of the governments. In this context of prevailing hunger and poverty, we have to see how aquaculture not only contributes to production increases, but at the same time contributes to alleviation of poverty, food security, food and nutrition security of a poor and rural development. While we have been discussing the issue and debating how poor can benefit from aquaculture, probably we have a better understanding of the issues now than we have 10 years ago due to a number of studies undertaken in the meantime. It does not mean that we know everything. We need to continue our efforts in understanding and creating opportunities for the involvement of rural poor in aquaculture and related activities and ensure that both producers and consumers benefit from the expansion of aquaculture. Keeping this in mind, we need to push forward the case of aquaculture in national, regional, and global meetings, taking advantage of renewed interest in agriculture in recent years in the context of recent food and financial crisis. If you look at the contribution of aquaculture to the livelihoods, Let us briefly have a look at the general contribution of aquaculture to nutrition, livelihood security, and contribution to the welfare of the states. Nearly 14 million people are involved in fish farming in Asia, and many more in supporting activities. While aquaculture production is low in the African continent, considerable population in these countries are also involved in aquaculture. As many previous speakers indicated, 70 to 80% of aquaculture production comes from small-scale farms. In Asia, many rural households are involved in some sort of aquaculture activities, and the same trend is slowly picking up in Africa. For example, in Bangladesh, where I was fortunate to work for a long time, where fish is the major source of animal protein available to rural poor and income groups, it is estimated that nearly 73% of the rural households are involved in some sort of aquaculture activities. 80 to 100% rural aquaculture products are sold in the market, generating cash for family. Let me tell me a practical experience while working in Bangladesh. When we started working with landless and women's self-help groups in Bangladesh way back in 1980s and initiating them to aquaculture with the help of a large number of NGOs that are present there, we assumed that the production from the small perennial and non-perennial ponds of 400 to 1,000 square yards will be consumed by the families, resulting in their improved nutritional status. While their nutritional status did improve, we were wrong in our assumption that fish produced in these household ponds will be consumed by the families. As 70 to 80% of produce was sold in the market, and with the cash generated, they purchased low-value fish and other food items. Let us look at the contribution of aquaculture exports to the national exchequers in some other countries. This slide shows the foreign exchange from exports and also the amount of money they're spending for imports. You can see in all these countries there is a surplus in the trade of fish. Unlike, I think, in some of the Latin American countries where we were told the other day there is a negative trade balance in terms of the fish. The same is the situation with regard to the Asian countries, some of the major producers of aquaculture producers in Asia, where there is surplus in terms of the fish trade. I could see that. Also, if you look at the balance in trade of fish and staple cereals in some of the sub-African countries, we could say Madagascar, Mauritania, Namibia, St. Helena, Senegal, Seychelles, and Tanzania, the net receipts from export of fish were able to meet the import of the staple rice, wheat, and other staple food of these countries. You may wonder why I'm bringing these statistics here. Because in spite of the importance of aquaculture and fisheries to the nutritional status, to the employment generation, and also foreign exchange exports, fisheries sector and aquaculture does not receive attention in the national plans and the budgets of many of the developing countries. Now, if you look at the future demand for fish projected by the FAO, demand for fish in the coming years and the role of aquaculture is expected to play. We have heard from the earlier speakers that in the context of declining wild stocks, aquaculture is expected to meet the increasing demand of up to 30 million tons per annum by year 2030. FAO statistics indicate that aquaculture growth rate is declining over time from 11.8% during 1985 to 1995 to 7.1% during 1995 to 2003 and still lower to 6.1% during 2004 to 2006. This may not be a big concern as higher growth in early years is probably due to small base this is the sector started with as productions have been increasing over the years. Combined with this, environment problems are on the increase and there is some indication that number of small farmers involved in the sector is declining in some countries. We have a number of success stories of aquaculture's contribution to the national incomes, nutrition and livelihoods, which will be described in detail in one of the panel discussions. As we said earlier, 70% to 80% of aquaculture production comes from small-scale farming in most of the developing countries. There are many success stories of aquaculture from developing countries. For example, fish and prawn farmers in Bangladesh, catfish and shrimp farmers in Vietnam, rohu farmers in Myanmar, grouper farmers in Indonesia, and the list goes on and on. The issue here is why the success stories are not being replicated in other countries and regions. We need agencies like NAC and FAO to extend these success stories to other countries. We also see that more and more attention is being paid by farmers to monoculture of high-value species rather than the low-input aquaculture and integrated systems, which are more suitable for resource-poor farmers. In their eagerness to increase production, sometimes the concerned agencies overlook the issue of long-term sustainability. This is a scene of integrated rice fish farming from Bangladesh. Some of the earlier speakers mentioned of the integrated farming systems like rice, fish livestock systems, integrated fish horticulture systems, etc., which optimize the use of on-farm resources and recycling agriculture byproducts and waste. While this is still practiced by a large number of farmers in many countries, there is a tendency to move to monoculture using pelleted feeds, which raises cost of production and also increases risk to the small farmers. Again, as I said earlier, 70% to 80% of aquaculture produce comes from small-scale farming. We have been using the terminology small farmers, resource-poor farmers, subsistence farmers, etc. While I do not delve on as to who constitutes a small farmer, as there have been many debates and discussions in the past, here we are talking of household managed farm activities. My friend Professor Peter Edwards is here, where we always talk of the definition of a small-scale farmer. The resources, technical capability, risk absorption capacity, and needs, for example, of a 0.4-hectare shrimp farmer are different from a 0.4-hectare tilapia farmer or an integrated rice-fish farmer. Hence, aquaculture interventions need to be specific for different target groups to ensure that benefits of aquaculture are equally distributed among the different people of the society and are not missed by the resource-poor farmers. As we all know, small farmers are handicapped by inadequate access to new technologies and knowledge and keeps them at disadvantage as compared to the larger farmers. Enhanced interaction is needed between science, farmers' needs, and the innovative knowledge. I again take back to my old days in Bangladesh, way back in late 1980s. When I went to Bangladesh way back in 1986, I saw hundreds of thousands of seasonal ponds varying anywhere between 200 square yards to 1,000 square yards, which retain water from about 3 to 6 months lying fallow covered with water hyacinth. I asked my colleagues and the farmers why you are not able to utilize these water areas. They said, we tried cultivating the Indian crops, but we did not succeed, and so they left them fallow. Then we said, since the Indian crops need deeper water, more cleaner water, and long period of time to grow, I said, let us look at species which could reach a market size within 3 to 6 months of time, could tolerate turbid and shallow waters. So we looked at tilapia and silver barb as candidate species for these ponds, and we demonstrated along with the Bangladesh Fisheries Research Institute and a number of NGOs. And within 2 to 3 years, this technology has picked up very well. And now there are no ponds lying fallow in Bangladesh. I'm sure my friends from Bangladesh will say that. And also we are talking the farmer's innovation. Just now Dr. Shakuntala said the value of the small indigenous fish. If you look back to the technology development, as a biologist, we are looking at higher quantities of production, but not looking at the nutrition value. In the so-called polyculture technology, scientists were advising the farmers to apply pesticides in the pond to kill the small indigenous fish so that the crop of polyculture or the carps can go faster. But now with the evidence that is coming that these small fish, which some of them are just only 2 inches in length, can contribute to the nutrition security of the small-scale farmers. Farmers have been innovating culture techniques that suit their needs. Example, polyculture of carps and integrated farming system that originated in China and practiced to date in all these countries. There is a need for use of modern communication technologies and participatory approaches to reach the rural farming community, as has been successfully demonstrated in a number of countries. Let us look at the poverty alleviation. If we are talking of enhancing the contribution of aquaculture to poverty alleviation, we have to understand the nature of poverty and causative factors for poverty, as they differ from country to country, region to region, and economic status. The type of intervention that could be benefit the target group, the institutional and technical support needed for motivating, training, and assisting in the production cycle, and marketing needs to be well understood. Targeted interventions have been successful in the past, as evident from a number of case studies. Panel 6.2 will be elaborating on these issues in more details today. Again, I take an example from my work back in the early 1980s with landless farmers. In Bangladesh, there are a large number of village ponds and tanks which were lying fallow due to multiple ownership. With the assistance of NGOs, the fallow ponds were leased to landless groups for carp farming. In their enthusiasm to involve as many farmers as possible, large number of farmers were involved in managing each of these water bodies, as this activity was in addition to their normal vocation. While the returns were good, individual share of the farmers was less than 10% of their household incomes, which discouraged farmers from further engagement in aquaculture activity. Learning from this, in subsequent years, depending on the size of the pond and expected return, the number of farmers to be involved was decided in such a way that the income from aquaculture constitutes at least 25% of their household income, and this activity has been very successful. If you look at the aquaculture and food security is linked with availability, access, utilization, and sustainability. FAO statistics indicate contribution of aquaculture to per capita consumption of fish globally increased from 14% in 1986 to 30% in 1996, and then to 47% in 2006. However, there are disparities in terms of availability and affordability from region to region, country to country, and among households of different economic strata. Studies undertaken in some Asian countries by my former colleagues at the World Fish Center indicated that contribution of fish to total animal protein intake is relatively high among poor than middle and rich income classes, and percentage household expenditure on fish is high among low income households and decreases with increase in income, indicating that fish is more important as a nutritional supplement to the low income groups. While often we make general statements on the contribution of aquaculture based on some case studies, there is no accurate assessment of the contribution of aquaculture to food and nutritional security and who the beneficiaries are in different regions, countries. So an assessment is very much needed for focused attention in the future. Yesterday, Professor De Silva Arsena, in his talk, mentioned the existence of over 66 million hectares of non-perennial waters, like the floodplains, oxbow lakes, etc., which offer opportunities for involvement of landless rural communities and create livelihood options for them through culture-based fisheries. Presently, only less than 5% of the area is used for farming fish. In addition, large water area is under reservoirs in different countries, with productions in some countries as low as 20 to 50 kilograms per hectare. Ample opportunities exist for involvement of rural communities in culture-based capture fisheries and cage culture in these reservoirs. In the past, issue has been raised, some mistakes were made in terms of introduction of alien species or inappropriate species that has resulted in damage to the ecosystem and biodiversity. Having learned the lessons from the past mistakes, in general, the concerned authorities are cautious in stocking these common property resources. In addition to when you talk of the livelihood aspects and also poverty alleviation through livelihood improvement, there are many more options in terms of culturing the non-food species. We could think of involvement of rural poor in culture of ornamental fish, which is a $5 billion market and $15 billion industry, and offer opportunities. Only few countries are actively participating in exporting and developing industry for the aquarium industry. But opportunities exist both in Asia and Africa and Latin America for involvement of the rural population in producing the aquarium fish. Mention has been earlier made of seaweed farming, which open opportunities for involvement of coastal communities. While this has been restricted to only a few countries at present, surveys need to be undertaken to identify suitable areas. Till recent times, aquaculture has been mainly the domain of man. In the fisheries sector, women are mostly involved in processing and marketing. A strong relationship has been observed between hunger and gender inequity. There are success stories from many countries of women involvement in aquaculture, leading to their empowerment and give a status to the woman in the household and also in the society. To give an example again from my work, way back in 1990s, working with NGO groups in Bangladesh, we motivated and trained a large number of women and women groups and involved them in aquaculture. After the first harvest, when one of the women was approached and asked how she feels being an earning member in the family, she said that she is very happy and also further said with a smiling face, before getting involved in aquaculture, her husband, who is a daily wage earner, used to beat her when there is no food in the house. With a big smile on her face, she further said, now he cannot afford to do that, and rather she can beat him as she is earning more than her husband. That is the sort of confidence and empowerment that has created through aquaculture. Subsequent impact studies that we have undertaken at World Fish Center has indicated that women are as good as men in managing their ponds, and in some cases, they did better than men. To make these success stories universal, it is necessary to ensure training, access to credit, investment capital, and marketing opportunities, and slowly evolve them from a farmer to an entrepreneur. Gender issues were overlooked for a long time, but receiving attention in recent years. FAO, NACA, World Fish Center have been very actively involved, and also the Asian Fisheries Society have been actively involved in organizing global conferences on women and gender issues to bring the issues to light. Some studies have indicated that equalizing women's status with men in South Asia and Sub-Saharan Africa will reduce malnourished children by 13.4 and 1.3 million respectively because of the higher income they could generate to the households. Panel 6.3 will be discussing the issues in more detail tomorrow morning. We look at the impact of the globalization on small farmers and their survival. Impact of globalization, trade liberalization, and stringent food safety standards or threatening the survival of small farmers who lack knowledge to comply with the standards and not in a position to meet the additional costs involved. If we are to protect the small farmers from marginalization, these farmers need to be educated and provided technical support. Formation of farmers, clubs, cooperatives, associations, clusters, and providing them with knowledge and BMPs, or best management practices, have resulted in increasing their bargaining power for input costs and negotiating price for their produce. Also, this resulted in better environment as they followed suggested best management practices. The project operated by FAO and ACA and Marine Product Export Development Authority in India implemented a project in India which is an example of success, and the lessons learned are being extended to other countries, as Sena has said the other day. In conclusion, we can say aquaculture has been contributing to poverty alleviation, food security, and rural development, and ample opportunities exist for enhancing its contribution. However, an accurate assessment of contribution of aquaculture is very much needed and timely. Role of aquaculture has to be well articulated in debates on food security and poverty alleviation at national, regional, and global level to enhance its contribution. And also there is a need for increased research focus on farmers and their issues. Thank you very much.
It's just a comment. It's an ongoing nagging thought, at least for me, as to how to define poverty and wealth. How do we indeed know we've alleviated the conditions in certain societies? And also, is this for an individual household or for the community as a whole or for the nation as a whole? Also, the other nagging thought is the ongoing struggle, at least for me, to understand what indeed constitutes development and sustainable development at that. What would be the measure of that, or what would be the mechanisms that would make that possible?
Well, if you are looking at a development at a household level, we are looking at the nutritional status of the people, the educational status, the household implements that happen. This was being used as a survey implement in that one. But otherwise, it's very difficult if you want a strict definition of what is a development.
Myself, Dhirendra Thakur from ASEAN Institute of Technology. Thank you, Dr. Gupta, for very informative presentation. You have noted, and we all know that 80% of the production is coming from a small-scale farmer in this region. And not only the production or contribution to the GDP, I think it has great implication for the employment, food security of the people. But this landscape is changing in this region. Particularly, if we talk about the case of shrimp farming in Thailand,
yes,
we have seen over years it's going through more and more industrialization. I should say that industrial acquisition. A small-scale farmer slowly being driven out of the business.
Yes.
And due to the reason of the scale of economy, they cannot sustain, but the companies can sustain. What is your vision that since this is more social implication than the contribution to the economy, should FAO or the panelists should come up with the recommendation that aquaculture business in this region should be declared as a social business where corporate may be involved in the production level, but they should share the benefits with the society. Maybe the other sector can be mostly led by the corporate, but production level, we have to do something. Otherwise, we will see that when the more a benefit will be generated, a smaller scale will be getting marginalized. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good, very good observation, as we have been also telling you, the small farmers are being taken away from the industry because they are not able to compete either for resources, natural, and also the input resources that they need, and also they don't have the competition in the marketing their products. That's where the government's effort is needed in protecting the interests of the small farmers. Again, what you talk of the corporators and the small-scale farmers, what we are talking, the contract farming, where the corporates are producing, giving the inputs and the technology to the small-scale farmers and buying back the produce. So There is no risk to the small farmers. So there are various ways of protecting the small farmers that we can discuss more in this panel discussion.
Thank you, Dr. Gupta. I'm happy I have this opportunity to see you in flesh. Atola is my name. I'm from Nigeria. Nigeria has a peculiar problem where the peasant coastal fish farmers are always fighting with the big oil corporations. The oil spillage is a serious problem there, and the multinational seems to be more powerful than the at times even the government and the small-scale fishermen and the coastal fish farmers.
Yeah.
So what we would like from a forum like this, this is a global forum, is a definite suggestion or proposal that can help out, especially the government, to be able to put some policies in place. It may not be global, but something that will address the issues in developing countries where there are no serious enforcement of regulations, such that maybe a percentage of the tax or the revenue from oil companies should be channeled towards fish farming, and maybe fishing companies or the oil companies should be able to invest a minimum percentage in aquaculture. This is the future of fish increase in developing countries. So whether something, I don't know how it can be captured. So from you, I know if it comes from a person like you, it will be taken seriously. Thank you very much.
Well, that is an important issue, but I don't know whether this forum can recommend this one. But what we saw in the oil spillage in the Gulf of Mexico, the British Petroleum has compensated for all those who have been affected, the fish farmer, the fishermen who have been affected by the oil spillage. But I don't know whether the same thing can happen in developing countries. The developing countries doesn't have a voice to fight with these multinationals. I know the problems that you are referring to in Nigeria. U.S. has got how much? BP is spending about $30 billion. I don't know how much they're spending in Nigeria. So probably we need the voice in the governments to fight for the rights of the fishermen and fish farmers.
Hi, it's Ali from South Africa. We're also working with small-scale farmers, and we do a lot of work in terms of empowering them in order to make decisions and help us guiding the strategy. The one thing that is very challenging to us at the moment is, if I just look at the agenda of global aquaculture and where it's heading, it looks like the bridge is widening actually between the small-scale farmers and the knowledge base and to where global aquaculture is going. I would like to hear your thoughts on how we address that, given now that we almost had to reset the agenda in terms of where we should go with global aquaculture.
I think that's correct. As I said, you know, the small farmers lack access to the recent technologies or knowledge, and also they do not have a voice in marketing their produce, both domestically and also overseas. So we have been talking about these clusters that many speakers have referred to in the earlier days. Of these clusters or the clubs or associations or cooperatives got a voice to bargain and get the inputs at reasonable cost, at also in selling their produce. Probably that's what is needed. Otherwise, it will be very difficult for small farmers to survive. That's where I think the assistance of not only the national governments, but institutions like NACA and FAO will have to come forward to assist the governments in planning that the small-scale farmers are not marginalized.
Thank you. I'm a bit lucky to be able to work with Dr. Gupta in going around the region, visiting small-scale fish farmers during the last few years. Anyway, talking about the poor, no? Even the poor, they are not the same.
Yes.
There are richer poor, there are not too poor, there are those very, very poor. Okay? So if we try to look at them, we try to hit the enterprising poor first, because these are the people who have a better chance. Okay? So once we have hit that, we go down the level and try to help the what we call as the laboring poor. Okay? And then down the level, because the poorest of the poor, I mean, you know, I doubt if can. The only way to help them is really welfare. So even at that, there should be some strategies to help the richer poor and then the middle class poor, and then the lowest poor will be really welfare. Thank you.
Alex Flores from FAO. Thank you very much for your talk, Dr. Gupta. I just wanted to probably make a distinction because among regions there are, a lot of particularities and very different perspectives. And for instance, in it is very difficult, in fact, to talk about food security as an issue in certain regions of Latin America, and also how aquaculture can contribute where you have the micro farmers, which who have ponds of 30 to 60 square meters, yeah, where they have a single crop per annum. So their aquaculture is a part of an agricultural system, and that's how it contributes, because they consume fish there because it's available, not because the staple diet is completely different. So there are differences very important to take into account. And also, I wanted to comment ask you your thoughts about the different approaches, because we normally think in terms of extension, for instance, for small farmers, and from the technical assistance approach. But what really makes a difference, in my opinion, is to apply the self-aid approach, which takes a lot longer, but it's rooted, and it can really make a difference.
I agree with you, because quite often the so-called on-station research or researches undertaken at the institute level does not percolate to the farmers. We have been talking in the on-farm participatory research. From my experience, I can tell when we are working with a number of farmers trying various technologies and strategies, when they clicked, there was no need for any extension agent. It spread like a wildfire from farmer to farmer. And also in the process, we learn lots of things, because the so-called technology that has been developed at research institution and are some circumstances that prevail at the field level, they will not be working. So it's necessary to work at the farm level to finalize the technology. And once the technology, and once the farmer is convinced that your technology is going to bring returns to him, I don't think you need any more extension. I'll tell you an example. When we were working in the farmers in Bangladesh, these are very small farmers having 200 square yards or even up to 400 square yards. The NGOs, once they have been convinced that with whatever the technology we have been suggesting are economically viable, they were giving the loans without any collateral, and the interest rate was 21 to 23% per annum. It's a very high interest rate as compared to the bank rate of 9 to 11%. Why the NGOs are giving loans without a collateral? Because they were convinced this aquaculture technologies will work. And why the farmers are taking the interest at loans at 21 to 23%? Because they're convinced if somebody is giving them loan without a collateral, that means the loan giver is convinced that the technology will work. The other things also from my experience I've seen, so-called extension donor-funded projects or nationally funded projects, we go for demonstration of the technologies. When you have developed a technology at institute level, we take the technology to demonstrate it in the farmer. During this demonstration period, that is prevalent at least, especially in most of the countries in Asia, the farmers are given free inputs in addition to the free technical inputs. I think it is working in a negative way, because anything is given to the farmer as a free input, he will not understand the value of that. At the end of the day, at the end of the crop, he will not understand how much he has produced. We were demonstrating, some of the projects were demonstrating like this. They showed bumper crop about 6 to 8 tons per hectare. We went to a next household and a farmer. We said, why are you not practicing this? Because that guy is making 6 to 8 tons per hectare. His reply was very simple. You also give me all that inputs free, I will also do that. That means he is not convinced that this guy has produced this because of the technology, but because inputs were coming here. I think this is a negative extension approach. That's what we found. And as I said, the approach that we did with NGOs worked very well because there is nothing free there. So the farmer knows the value of what the inputs he's getting, so he has to work hard, take interest in aquaculture, and get the profits from there.
Sharif Saleh from Egypt. During the last 3 days, we heard that the actual production of aquaculture globally, it's around 52 million. Yeah. And we don't have the chance during the coming 10 years, we need to move to the ocean and sea. We need around 30 million extra tons, maybe in 10 years. I'm afraid a little bit because people, they are different classes. They are medium, poor, and rich people. Usually the seawater are noble fish, like in French we said poisson noble. They are expensive fish. So the strategy from my eye or panorama, it is not clear. Okay, maybe we are going to return in 10 years here or in other places. Okay, worldwide, what is the strategy? Are we going to feed rich people or poor people or medium? This is the questions. Thank you.
I think in general, the aquaculture development is taking place based on the market demand. And as I said, those people who are involved in aquaculture activities, they are looking at what species can bring more returns to them. So more and more people are moving from freshwater aquaculture to mariculture, or within freshwater aquaculture, they're moving away from culture of low-value species to high-value species. One example I can give you, I was visiting some of the farmers in my country, in India, before coming here. People have moved from carp culture to pangasius culture, and within a span of 4 years, there are 100,000 tons of pangasius being produced because they were saw a higher market for pangasius as compared to the carp. So the producers are looking for the margins in profit. So it's very difficult for us to dictate who to do what.
Yeah, Peter Edwards from Asian Institute of Technology. Dr. Gupta, you raised a very important point about this growth rate of aquaculture is actually declining, and I think we need to make this clear. You did explain it, that it's not really an issue because the baseline it started from was very small, and now there's so much aquaculture, even with the declining growth rate, the absolute increase is skyrocketing. And I travel a lot around Asia, and I don't see these declines. I just see aquaculture booming in many, many areas. And compared to the human population growth, are we concerned about this slowing? I mean, we're scared. The human population is going to increase at least 50% before it levels out. Yet the percentage increase in the human population has been declining for at least 20 years, at least two decades. But the absolute human population is still skyrocketing because the baseline now, I mean, the baseline was very small before, and now there's such a huge population, even with the declining growth rate, the absolute increase per year, increasingly, is still very high. So aquaculture, all this business about moving, we need to go into the ocean, fresh water is finished, I don't believe it, okay? There's a lot of fresh water in the major aquaculture-producing areas of Asia. Certainly there's increasing competition for land and for water, but aquaculture could compete with a lot of this, and fish culture can continue, inland fish culture can continue to rise in many areas. Dr. Gupta just mentioned that over the last 3 years, Pangasius culture in Bangladesh, they introduced a species from Thailand, striped catfish, Pangasius. And a couple of years ago, they'd reached 300,000 tons. Is that not an increase? Spectacular increases in production. And in India, I was in India 4 years ago, it was mainly Rohu, 500,000 tons of Rohu. And I've just been told, this last couple of years, while I've been stuck in Bangkok, they're producing 100,000 tons of Pangasius now. So these are spectacular increases in production within the heartlands of aquaculture in Asia. Of course, the issue is how can we, as you mentioned, how can we do this in other areas to satisfy these growing human development problems?
Yeah. I think there are a lot of opportunities for increasing production from Africa, you know, aquaculture production in Africa. After all, it's, you know, very little. It's in infancy, I should say, that people have realized the mistakes they have made in the past in terms of transplanting the Asian aquaculture into African aquaculture and the failures. Now I think there is, again, an interest in generating the aquaculture in most of the African countries. I think a lot of, in the future, if properly done, African can contribute to the global aquaculture.
Yeah, João Ferreira from Portugal. It's just a comment. I'm going to show this tomorrow in the virtual tool session, but I thought I'd just say it in plenary. If you do some GIS work with respect to offshore aquaculture, there's about, well, there are over 100 countries with about 100 kilometers squared of potential area, and that's probably actually an overestimate. That would work out at something around top end 10 million tons. So if you're talking 30, if you're going out to the ocean, you're only talking about a third of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd just like to take a final word again to thank Dr. Gupta for his talk. And that closes the plenary session. And again, I would like to re-thank the three speakers that we've had since lunch, and also to thank the audience for the stimulating discussion.